You are listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM and on the web at weft.org.
Community Radio, followed by See You at the Show, coming up next. Stay with us after that for Lady Lynn Live at 6 p.m., Roots Rock and Reggae at 8 p.m., and Get in Your Jammies at 10 p.m. And now here's this week's edition of See You at the Show. And this is Linda Evans, as always, but this week we have a special guest co-host, Selena Trujillo. So welcome back to See You at the Show. This is December 8th of 2022. Can't believe we're already in December. This is the second show of December, and I'm still not used to saying that it's the last month of 2022. And I have been doing the show a lot by myself because Eric has been in Wisconsin. He's splitting his time between Wisconsin and Illinois. And so I'm super excited today to have Selena in studio to talk about one of the shows that we both saw. We didn't get to see it together, but we both saw it. And one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on, Selena, is we've had you on before to talk about some shows that you've been in, but I noticed that we see you in passing, or we've gone to shows together, and I know that you see a lot of theater in town, and I love your take on things, so I thought it would be fun to have you come in, and I hope you come in more often. We'll see how it goes and if you have fun. Just tell us a little bit about yourself and how you kind of got involved in the Champaign-Urbana theater scene.
Absolutely. Well, first, thanks for having me. It's just fun to hang out and chat anything with you. So chatting theater is certainly fun as well. My history in the theater world is very new. So I'd say probably just about a year ago, I got involved mostly because my son was involved and interested. And, you know, at that point we were still kind of in the pandemic world of us not having live theater. And so he was doing stuff online. And I think that gave me more of an opportunity to kind of, look over his shoulder and see what was going on. And I kind of got reeled into playing a role when someone wasn't able to make it. And that was my intro into actually performing, other than, being an audience member. I think I've been a longtime consumer of theater, musical theater. I grew up on the East Coast, so seeing some Broadway shows and some operas and just different live performances. But I think it kind of became more a part of my life within the past year, and kind of living vicariously through my son, and then kind of getting more and more involved with Champaign Park District and CUTC and Coalescence Theater, kind of more as a, mostly I think I have been wearing the hat of just thinking, oh, I'm a helper and, supporting what's going on. So, so I do see a lot of shows. and I've grown now interested in seeing more of them, and just the whole art of storytelling. And I think I do have a really soft spot for storytelling that kind of lifts the voices of those who historically been silenced, and kind of these real stories that are in our recent history and kind of contemporary issues that are going on in the world around us. So this one seemed the perfect one to kind of chat with you about too.
Right.
Because it is so contemporary.
Yeah, it's super contemporary and hard hitting and a local playwright. So there's just so many great things about the show. So we're going to talk about Homegrown, an Insurrection Play by Nicole Anderson Cobb. And I talked about it a little bit last week when I was on the show by myself, but I kind of wanted to save a lot of it for when we could talk together. And we haven't really, I know that your initial response to it was similar to mine, but we really haven't talked about it prior to being on the show. So, which I kind of like. I like to kind of have it spontaneous and stuff like that. So what was your gut reaction watching it? And also, before we get too far into it, I want to know, since you have some younger kids than I do, sometimes I'm not a great, because people keep asking me, like, how young.
Right.
So, well, while we're talking, maybe think about an age that you think would be a good cutoff. Because I did ask, I asked them when I went to see the show, because I saw it while it was still in tech, and they were all saying, well, there are high school, there's two high school, don't want to call them kids, actors in the show, and so obviously high school and probably middle school, but just kind of be thinking about like what age, because there are some kind of hard issues being being talked about.
Absolutely. So I would say my first, and I did go in with it with that lens also, because I didn't go with my own children, and I kind of had the, you know, in the back of my mind, you know, is this something that they could see? And so, you know, my first initial reaction of seeing it was that, you know, I think because it hits so hard, because it is so contemporary in terms of, you know, this feels like so much has happened since it happened, and yet it's still so fresh in our memories to see something so recent. It's like, wow, this is almost like too much too soon. You know, you kind of feel like, ooh, it's so intense because of that, because you realize it's another reminder how we're kind of living in the aftermath of a very important historical moment. And we're still kind of feeling the reverberations of that and seeing, you know, seeing that still play out. So I think that made it feel a little bit more intense. And then in terms of, you know, the age, I think this is probably one of the plays where, you know, I felt it was an easier sell for me to bring my kids to some other things. If someone curses once, or, you know, it's pretty easy to explain, well, some people use the language that we don't use, or, you know, we don't use an everyday language. I think in this play, I would say the parental discretion that's kind of needed is, how comfortable do you feel talking with your children about this topic if they haven't seen or talked about it before? So if this is going to be a new topic to them, if they don't realize what happened on January 6th, then there's a lot of kind of backstory you're going to need to provide for them. Secondly, it does talk about things like gun violence. And I know for that, that's particularly hard, again, because our kids, you know, even our young kids are kind of facing this as a reality. You know, it's not just something that is on TV. It's not so distant. It actually is relevant to them. So given their own mental state, given their own experience with lockdowns, you know, even in our own Urbana schools and Champaign schools, you know, it might be heavier for some kids to kind of see that play out in a dramatic sort of way. So I guess I would kind of put those disclaimers on there that I would, you know, there are certainly young people in the audience, and I would feel comfortable bringing my 12-year-old, but I would also be aware that there would be a lot of stuff that I would want to talk about with her in that. And I would say, even if you had an older child, if that child has been struggling recently with, you know, very close gun violence in their own personal experience, that is something that I know for me in particular, like, that hits especially hard.
Yes, I agree with everything you said about it. And it's weird. Mm-hmm. It's weird because I've also talked about this, and I know I've gotten some pushback on my feelings about this, but so it's interesting that the two shows that are really going on locally right now are A Christmas Story and then this one, A Christmas Story is happening at Parkland, and then Homegrown, mm-hmm. an insurrection play is happening at the station during the same time period. And I chose not to go to A Christmas Story. And I know some people think I'm crazy about this, but the gun, even though it's supposed to be a funny show, and like back to a simpler time, it's like sold it. The sure. last time I saw it was at with the Park District a few years ago at the Virginia, and even then I was disturbed by a small a younger kid wanting a gun, and then there was like a dream sequence in the school with the gun. And even though it's supposed to be kind of not a realistic type of gun, for some reason, besides it was put in the whole backdrop of this being kind of funny and light and stuff, that bothered me more than a show like Homegrown, where it's supposed to be dramatic and it's real. And I don't know. I know that this is like just my personal issue with it. I really like Homegrown, and I'm glad that it's done. And I would, of course, like what you said, I would talk to my kids before and things like that. But I have less of an issue having my kids see this than something that puts guns in a fun show. And I need to figure that out myself, like why that
is. Oh, sure, of course.
I couldn't even bring myself to go see it because I wanted to review it and stuff like that. And just, it hit me really hard the last time I saw it. And I was just like, I don't know why we're still doing that show. So gun violence is a very complicated thing, obviously.
It is.
In our society. And I don't know if you know anybody who actually went to the insurrection, like it sounds so crazy, who went to Washington to
now you're making me out myself. No, I don't know anyone other than senator, you know, people, right. You know, I don't know personally, but follow on social media, that are political leaders that were there and experiencing that kind of firsthand. But no, I don't know.
So I do. And I remember very strongly, because I thought that you might know her too. And I'm not going to like out who she is.
Okay,
she hasn't lived in Illinois for a while, but I met her through homeschooling groups and stuff like that. And she was involved in flag football back when there was a homeschooling flag football group.
Yeah.
And we had stayed in touch just from social media and stuff like that. And while I was watching Homegrown, because they don't go straight into the insurrection, they kind of build up to it. There's like several months of time frame that the show covers, and it's kind of talking about what's leading up to it through the lens of a church, like a local church in anywhere USA, and how divided the people are, and also the division in a family too, that like, you know, the husband doesn't necessarily feel exactly the same way that the wife does. And while I was watching it, I couldn't help but remember, so this friend was posting Instagram pictures on the bus to go from, I believe she was living in Florida at the time, to DC, and she was like, we're gonna take back our country and stuff like that. And I have been a long time, I mean, I've been going to protests since I can first remember. My parents, especially my mom, was big into you know, being out there to, you know, maybe the first protest I went to was maybe to get ERA ratified, Equal Rights Amendment. And so I've been going to protest my entire life. My kids have gone to protests and stuff like that. And so when she was first posting about this, I was like, okay, obviously I don't agree with her politically. And, but you know, people have a right to, you know, gather and say things. But very quickly, her posts turned from, you know, just people going and collectively getting together and saying something that they think needs to be said, and to something that sounded scary. So even before we realized what this was going to turn into, I could see a progression. And I have no idea since, like, she took down her Instagram after this event happened. So I have no idea how involved she was or, you know, how far she made it or anything like that. But I had started taking pictures of her Instagram because I was just, wow. I just could feel like this was going to be something different. And her husband was a retired Navy, and that's, we kind of connected on that because my ex was in the Navy too. And that was another thing that I just kept thinking about. And he was not in any of her Instagram posts, even though they were very close and he was retired, so he could have gone with her. So it started, so June Clark Eubanks plays Kelly. So June's character kind of morphed into this friend of mine, and I could totally see this happening. It just felt so incredibly real.
Yes, I agree. I agree. And it's interesting because I chatted with June after that show, and she was like, so did you hate me at first? Was I like, and I think the storytelling that she's able to pull off in this is that she's just an everyday, you know, she might be a little too uppity, too smiley, too bubbly, but that's not like someone that you hate. You're just like, okay, that person's got a lot of positivity and energy, right? And then the transformation that kind of quickly happens, you know, before our eyes, I think one is still one that's very believable. And I think we do see it. You know, I have definitely seen that in my own life as well, of, you know, friends that I was like, oh, what is kind of going on here? And I think also what makes it believable and real is that, you know, even in the play, they talk about, you know, this character needing this kind of sense of belonging and being amongst her people, and there's some camaraderie that's there. And so I think part of it is getting caught up in this absolute, you know, mob, right? But it was also you know, perhaps fear or needing for a sense of belonging or something else, a promise that's unfulfilled, that draws people who might not feel like they belong or might not feel like they have power or might not feel like, you know, for whatever reason, or are fearful of, you know, losing something that, you know, a president or a party or whatever can promise them a better life. And so the kind of the pull towards that, while I don't follow, I can see how that can be enticing to people that feel a certain way.
Right. And I thought the fact that it was based in a church was, I really like that Nicole did that too, because I think it's really easy for people to write people off depending on their religion and stuff like that, and for there to be differing feelings even in a Christian church. It was good because I think it's easy to lump, well, okay, if people are this, then they believe this way or whatever, and that's just not true. There's a lot of in between, and there's, you know, not enough communication happening. So I really love that part of it too. And we mentioned earlier, because that there's two teenagers in the show, which I thought they did a great job too.
It was extremely touching to see them. And I think Nicole was really able to I don't know how, like she was just like really able to capture, I feel like, the teen experience of, you know, the backdrop was the insurrection, but I think you could have applied that to anything where these teens feel disconnected from their parents. Their parents, you know, are busy doing stuff, which of course also happened in the pandemic, but, you know, regardless of how righteous your and passionate you may be about work or religion or your political thing that you're doing or whatever it is, you know, the question remains, like, you know, how much are you willing to invest in that at the expense of spending quality time with your own children? And I think those teens were both able to kind of, you know, experience that and then, you know, attempt to grapple with that with their own parents,
And I think it's easy in a profession like being a minister or other professions where you're working with nonprofits or trying to help the community as a whole, to maybe lose sight in your what's happening in your own family, because you're so busy taking care of others, which is a good thing, obviously, but it can make it harder for you to see what's going on in your own. And also with teenagers, it's really easy to feel like, oh, they're doing okay.
They have their own things.
Right.
But it's interesting in a story, though, because I think we tend to kind of scapegoat the like busy parent that's busy with work, right? Mm-hmm. And this is like, you could say, oh, but they were busy with good things, right?
Right.
They're doing good deeds. They're doing, you know, they're busy with a nonprofit, like you said, with a nonprofit, or, you know, protesting, whatever it is. It's like, oh, but these are like kind of worthy agendas.
Right.
But it doesn't matter. Your teen is still, you know, your teen doesn't care like what you're doing.
Right.
Your teen realizes that they want to spend time with you. And of course, at the teen age, you know, they don't always want to spend that much time with you. And so if they're wanting that and you're not even able to meet the small amount that they're wanting to spend with you, it really does make you question. You know, it certainly made me question as an audience member. That's like, wow, this is real.
Right.
And this is something I'm asking myself, even if I'm doing something that I deem is worthy or, you know, a good cause.
Right. Right. And also it can be tricky as a teen parent, because they don't really want to spend much time with you until they do. Right. It's like, you know, get away from me. You know, I'm with my friend. Oh, wait, now I need you right this second. And most of our lives aren't set up for drop everything in those like few spare moments that your teen does want to spend with you. And I really liked how the friendship between the two boys, the two teens, was really, it felt very genuine, and they felt like they had a really good connection on stage. And then, you know, there's just so much in the play. It's 2 hours, including the 10-minute intermission, but it didn't feel like 2 hours to me. Like I was fully engaged the whole time.
Yes, but then
when I think about all that she put into the play, I'm like, oh my gosh, how was it not like 5 hours or something? Because you know, there's also kind of like a love in her interest between two of the characters, two of the adults, and kind of talking about, you know, their past and you know, their history when they were younger and things like that too. So, and there's, you know, a lot of issues about race and gun violence and just so much. Like,
and family loyalty, you know, there's the main character has parents that are pastors at a different church. And so the whole, you know, what is it? You know, she didn't, I mean, I guess I won't go into all the details, but, you know, why be at one church versus another church? And you know, and that can apply to anything, right? Like, why not be part of the family business? Why are you starting your own business? Or why do you, you know, so I think it, again, just kind of brings up questions about family and family identity and loyalty. But she does weave a lot into it, and I feel like all of it is necessary. I heard from Becky Lowenstein that the love interest was not originally part of the play, and it was added later. And I think it is such a great component, because it demonstrates that Bernice, the main character, you know, she's relied upon actually quite often and unfairly to kind of be the savior. Mm-hmm. And it isn't necessarily one, like, I think she feels, you know, she accepts it for a very long time. But I think, you know, the love interest that exists there is one that that is really for her. And that's beautiful to see. It's beautiful to see that in her caretaking of so many people and her family and the church, that there is someone there that, you know, is the literal bringer of coffee. And like, you know, she allows herself to be taken care of in that sort of way too. And so I think that was a sweet and necessary kind of part of the story that, you know, demonstrates even her kind of maturity with, you know, getting boundaries and self-care and prioritizing herself. And that's a development that kind of happens throughout the story as well. And it happens in kind of in conjunction with her, you know, kind of getting deeper in this relationship.
Right. And it is a big, big part of what the show is about, even though you've got the insurrection and other things going. The fact that primarily a lot of times it falls on women, but it often falls mm-hmm. on one or two people to do a lot of the emotional and physical heavy lifting in organizations mm-hmm. and in life, and how to kind of cut that off a little bit and say, I've got to take care of myself too, or even just mm-hmm. be seen. It's very easy to be that person that takes all of that on, and people just rely on you and they, expect you to do it indefinitely. And it's often women. And I think Misty plays that part beautifully. She's so mm-hmm, beautiful. Mm-hmm.
It's so because you just, I think it is women, but I think it's also women of color too. And people of color in general. We can even see that currently, we're kind of, it's the expectation that people of color will do the right thing, will save us, will put in the extra time. It's extremely unfair. And I think, her coming to terms with that, she doesn't even kind of explicitly do that, but I know me watching it, I'm like, stick it up for yourself, girl. I wanted to be like, because it does take time, because we can fall into these patterns of, but no one else is here, right? No one, who else is going to answer the phone? Who else is going to, do this thing? And it's kind of easy to kind of fall into those patterns and to kind of take a stand and reclaim the space, the time, the energy for yourself. I thought was a beautiful, it's a beautiful demonstration of growth.
Right.
And I think it's good for us as audience members, but also in people in organizations to kind of be self-reflective and be like, how is this happening in my organization? How is this happening in my church? How is this happening in my family? Mm-hmm. Because those things, they can tend to seem like they're happening automatically, but really it takes, a closer look and say, okay, let's put an end to this.
Right. So do you feel like there's other aspects that we haven't really, I guess we haven't talked about Mike, who's played by Alexander Harris. Mm-hmm. So he is the brother of Misty Martin, mm-hmm. her niece. And I thought he was great. Like, I don't know if I've ever seen him in anything before. And he actually came out and talked to me at intermission and before. Seems very fun and funny in real life. He did a great job in the play, and he has kind of he's gotten very caught up in the Black Lives Matter movement in the play, mm-hmm. and how that kind of has taken over his life. Again, good cause, but it's it kind of completely takes over his life to possibly the detriment of his family. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And how strongly he feels, which is completely understandable and everything, but it's hard when we're passionate about something and when it is life or death,
right,
to not prioritize that seems, well, of course you would have to prioritize. Yeah.
Sure, right. Of course. Right. But again, that kind of self-reflection, that's like, we have roles to play in kind of taking care of this world that we live in, but we have lots of things that kind of need our attention too. And, it's kind of the hard work to kind of tease apart, I have a finite amount of time. I have a finite amount of energy. Where do I put, where do I put that? And how do I, I have my own child, to take care of, in this situation, I've got my own Black child that's living in this world too. How do I, feed into him as well?
Well, sadly, we're out of time. Thank you so much, Selena, for being my co-host today. We'll have you back again, I'm sure. Don't forget, Saturday is audition day for CUTC's Arsenic and Old Lace in Parkland Theater. Also has two shows for auditions. And Zoo Improv is back, and it's going to be even